First case.
Case number 20-2071, United States versus Michelle Simmermaker.
All right, let's proceed then with the appellant, Mr. Sheets.
Good morning.
You may proceed.
May it please the court, my name is Ray Sheets. I'm coming this morning from Cedar Rapids, Iowa. This is a Fourth Amendment suppression case, and rather than reciting the facts, which are quite straightforward, the district court relied on two things to deny the defendant's motion. The first was that the court found that the defendant was an overnight guest as opposed to a visitor. And as we set forth in our brief, there really is no distinction between the two anymore after the Supreme Court's Olson case. Minnesota versus Olson. The Supreme Court in Olson emphasized it was not whether a person is a guest, an overnight guest, or a visitor. What matters the most is whether the person had a reasonable expectation of privacy in the property to be searched. And the leading case, I think, in the Eighth Circuit on that issue is that Hummel Jones case. And in that case, there was a search done at night. There's no doubt that the persons involved in that case were overnight guests. They were staying overnight at a birthing clinic. And so the Eighth Circuit had no problem finding that because they were overnight guests, or there was no distinction made. But those persons certainly had an expectation of privacy that the court recognized. So I'm going to move on to the second part of the district court's analysis. And if you recall, the magistrate judge granted the motion to suppress. And it was after the government made some objections that the district court then rejected the magistrate's reasons for granting the motion. The second reason the district court, thing that the district court emphasized was the collective knowledge doctrine. And first of all, I'd like to state whether the collective doctrine collective knowledge doctrine applies or doesn't apply, it really doesn't make any difference in that, assuming that it does apply, police still needed to get a warrant for that Brinks box that was locked, and they did not have that. So the collective knowledge doctrine is based upon the premise that all officers involved in a search collectively know the background of the case, assuming that there is some communication between the officers.
Counsel, isn't Judge Bobas here? Isn't the real question whether or not there was enough information in the officer's possession connecting your client to the information underlying the warrant, that is the distribution of drugs out of this location? It seems to me, and correct me if you think I'm wrong, but it seems to me the case turns on that particular issue. And if I recall here, there was a meth pipe found next to your client on the couch. There was information the officers had when they obtained the warrant that there were multiple people staying in the house. The officers had some background with your client. Whether or not that, you know, is relevant or not, I guess I'm not sure. But why isn't that enough to connect your client and her Brinks box to the probable cause determination that was found in the warrant?
Well, it is. I mean, it would be sufficient probable cause. And if the officers believe that that was indeed the case, then they needed, just like they obtained a warrant to search her person, they needed to also get a warrant to search that Brinks box. So if the court recalls, the defendant was found sleeping on a couch, I guess the first clue that someone is an overnight guest or a visitor. And she was ordered to, she was removed from the couch and placed into a different room. And that's where the Brinks, on that same couch was the meth pipe and the Brinks box. If there was indeed probable cause enough to get into that Brinks box, then the officers had the responsibility to get a second warrant, just as they did get a second warrant to search the person of the defendant. So yes, I, whether there was probable cause or not, we'll concede that there was, but the issue becomes, if the officers believe that yes, indeed there was probable cause, they should have gotten a warrant.
Well, here's the question I've got is the warrant does allow you to search lock boxes generally. There's a meth pipe, there's a Brinks box. It's in the proximity of the defendant, but there's no assertion by anyone that's my Brinks box. There's no question asked, I guess, either about it. So that's sort of problematic. But I mean, you got a warrant in hand says you can search lock boxes. You got a meth pipe and a lock box. Why do you need another warrant?
Well, as the Eighth Circuit has noted, that when it comes to searching the possessions of visitors or overnight guests, it gets into a very difficult area.
It does get into a difficult area, except we know that people are coming and going and that they're involved in the sale and buying of drugs. That's in the warrant. And so this is a person who's dressed in her night clothes. It's 9 in the morning. During the course of the search, she says all the meth in the house is mine. You know, I'm having a hard time, you know, that, you know, cut through the whole chase. I mean, I'm saying, you know, at the very end, I mean, how is an officer not able to rely on a warrant that says I can look in lock boxes?
Well, they could if they knew that that person was living in the home. Because this person was a guest, guests have protection. They have to have...
But only if you can establish that it's their property that's being searched, right? I mean, when the lockbox was open, there was no indication that it was her property, that an officer would know that. I mean, it's a lockbox next to a meth pipe on a couch.
Well... Yes, that's true. But what's also what the court struggled with at the district court level was the fact that the officer that found the box and searched the box didn't testify, was never called as a witness. So we don't know those things. You're assuming a lot of things that the officer knew this or that. And there was no testimony in regards to that at all. The only thing that we knew, we know that the officers know, was that Ms. Simmermaker, the defendant, didn't reside at that house. We know that they've known her since she was a child, so they knew she wasn't the named person in the warrants. So that's what we know. The officer who found the box and searched the box never testified for reasons that we don't know. I'd like to reserve the last minute and a half.
Very well. Ms. Nidal? You may proceed.
May it please the court, Emily K. Nidal, Assistant United States Attorney from the Northern District of Iowa, here representing the government. In this case, Ms. Simmermaker was an overnight guest and connected to the ongoing criminal activity at the time the lockbox in question was searched. It was within the scope of the warrant issued, and to the extent it is not, this is not a case that would warrant suppression, as the officer's actions were not deliberate, reckless, or negligent. Done in violation of the warrant. As the court has already discussed this morning with Mr. Sheets, there is sufficient evidence to connect this defendant to this residence. She was an overnight guest. The defendant concedes that and even argues that in arguing for standing in this case. She was found asleep in the residence. Mr. Sheets indicated that they knew she wasn't living there. I don't know that officers would be able to say that they didn't know she was living there. They didn't anticipate going in that she was living there, but upon arrival, I don't think they could have established whether or not at that time, for sure, she hadn't moved in. Defendant was the only adult downstairs. She was enclosed, consistent with an overnight stay. Her daughter was known to frequent that residence, and her granddaughter was also present. Defendant also had had a recent drug conviction of her own. She had been involved in a federal case where her husband was charged. Ultimately, she was not in that case. And the resident in use had a history of drug use and people coming and going and dealing from that residence. Defendant again was sleeping on the couch with a meth pipe and a Brinks box, indicating her involvement with the ongoing criminal activity. I'd like to highlight some of the evidence in this case from the government's video exhibits, just for the court's reference. Although it's not necessary to know specifically what Officer Fry was thinking, as this is an objective rather than a subjective standard, I'd like to point out to the court in review of government's exhibit number 3, at approximately 4:10, Officer Fry is identified. He's identified specifically as wearing a Muscatine County sweatshirt. He has a hat on. That's done in the transcript at page 57. Turning then to government's exhibit number 7, with the knowledge of what Mr. Fry looks like, would be noteworthy that at approximately 18:58, Officer Fry can be seen coming down the steps. Shortly after that, Ms. Zimmermaker has asked to use the restroom, and Mr. Fry indicates, before you do that, we're going to need to search you, essentially, because of all the things that were going on over there in the couch area, indicating that he was aware that she was the one there. Additionally, by watching government's exhibit number 7, you can get a better sense of the closeness of the room and the participants in this case. All the officers are milling around, all the defendants are milling around. It's a close quarters area. You can see the room off to the side where Ms. Zimmermaker was found. Noteworthy that at around the 21-minute mark of government's exhibit 7, our Officer Fry also talks about Jeff, referring to Jeff Zimmermaker, the defendant's husband, not being out of prison for another 10 to 15 years. This is a reference to his recent or fairly recent federal sentence at the time. Based on the facts in this case, it is clear that this defendant was connected with the residence, was connected with the criminal activity. Would note that defendant indicated the district court struggled with the lack of testimony by Officer Fry. It did not. The magistrate court admittedly addressed that issue, but the district court was not concerned with that, as it recognized the collective knowledge doctrine, and in this case found instead that the objective knowledge of the officers made it appropriate for these officers to search a lockbox, as noted, that was specifically listed in the warrant. So based on all of these facts, we believe the district court properly decided this issue. Would note that there's been no question to whether or not this defendant had standing, but it is her standing and the reason she has standing that is the same reason that officers are able to search her property. It's her connection to the house. This is not a situation where officers came upon a defendant in a residence and it appeared that she had just gotten there or was merely stopping briefly. She was asleep. The fact that she was sleeping essentially with this lockbox, given her history and the history in this case, is also makes it more suspicious that there is contraband within the box and it was appropriate to search. Unless the court has any questions for me, that is essentially the government's argument. And if there's no questions, I would yield the rest of my time.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Sheets.
Thank you, Your Honor. I want to go back and address a couple of questions that Judge Erickson had or statements that Judge Erickson made about the pipe that was located and about the statements that Ms. Zimmermaker made at the time of the search. Page 26 of the magistrate's report and recommendation. And again, the magistrate made findings of fact that were not objected to by either party. And the magistrate found, without any objection from the government, that Officer Fry was unaware of any statements made by the defendant regarding her ownership of the box or its contents. That the when office there's no facts in the record that Officer Fry saw a methamphetamine pipe prior to his decision to search the box. And so when you look at those facts, I mean, now we know them, but we don't, at the time of the search, we don't have any evidence as to what this officer knew. He wasn't presented by the government as a witness. And so I'd ask the this court to follow the findings of fact of the magistrate that were unobjected to at the time. I don't think it makes any difference whether Officer Fry, who searched the box, what he was wearing or what he looks like. I'm not sure what that adds to the analysis. Are there any other questions? Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you very much. And before we conclude, Mr. Sheets, I note that you are serving as appointed counsel in this matter. The court extends its thanks to you for your service.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right, the case is submitted, and the court will render a decision in due course.